Welcome back to You're Not My Father, the only podcast based out of my house in Anchorage, Alaska, at least as far as I know. Today we're kicking off another series of fatherly interviews, and I'd like to introduce you to Tyler Young. Welcome to the show, Tyler.
Thank you, Thomas. I'm happy to be here. Do I get a prize?
Some snow? A bunch of ice? We can ship it to you. I'm sure it'll still be fresh and frozen.
Hey, man, just send me down some fish and with that ice, and I'll be real happy.
You know, that is the number one request I get is fish, smoked fish, salmon.
Yeah, salmon.
So for those of you that don't know who Tyler is, or hell, don't even know who I am, why don't you tell us how you and I met, Tyler? I think this would be a great way to kick this off.
So Thomas is a CEO and a business owner of a company that provides hospitality businesses with their point of sale. And I also happen to have a hospitality point of sale. And I saw Thomas and I said, I think that guy should sell my point of sale. And then I heard he had a podcast. And then I started listening to that podcast. And I listened to half a dozen episodes, learned a lot about him on those. And it just struck a chord with me. I loved what he was doing, how you were putting yourself out there. And quickly said, I want to go talk to him about that. And so we met through the RSPA, you know, we met through our industry itself. And today, no, we don't do any business together, but we are on a podcast together.
Yeah. Yeah. And thanks for coming on. You know, honestly, this is the first time I think that I've actually had a listener on the show. So you get the first prize award for being the first listener on the show, which is really, really cool. You know, it's funny, you know, my podcast, I'm not going to say it's really popular. I mean, I get decent numbers for somebody like myself, but I don't get a lot of feedback. So if there was one piece of feedback that you could give me, and I'm just like all business here for a moment, I'm like, if there's one piece of feedback, Tyler, that you could give me about my podcast, what would it be?
I would ask you, Thomas, what is the purpose of your podcast? And when you know the purpose of your podcast, my feedback would be do that 100%. Because I don't think, from what I could tell, you're 100% into this podcast. It's not promoted. You're not growing it. You're not, you know, really putting a lot of your effort into it. It's once a month. You talk about how you're not sure when you're going to do the next one. And so it just seems like you're doing it, but you're not treating it like you treat your business. And do you want to, would be the question. And if you do, then my feed would be back would be to then do that. And if your answer is not, then I have completely different feedback. But I would challenge you to take it serious, because there are a lot of people out there that need fatherly advice. There's a lot of people that are fathers out there that need to hear other examples and ways to do things. And I think since you have put yourself out into the world, which so many are uncomfortable doing, you might as well go all in.
Well, I appreciate all that. That's amazing feedback. Certainly little that is a gut punch, you know, take that, Thomas.
But well, hey, I think I did tell you when I said I wanted to come on your show, I said, I'm gonna punch you in the face.
That's okay. It's really funny because since you and I met in Puerto Rico, I have really kind of considered doing more with my podcast, taking it more seriously. So I'm kind of in the process of doing that. But I really appreciate the throwing the gauntlet down, the challenge, you know, of like if you're going to do this, do it. You know, don't screw around with it. Get it done. Do it. So I appreciate that. You know, sometimes it's that tough love that helps get you to the next level. So, you know, it's
yeah. What a subject to start on, tough love. Like, does it exist today? You know, raising children, you know, is tough love even, it's so frowned upon. It's all about the emotion and the child's feelings. You know, what is tough love today compared to what it was 30 years ago? And what kind of difference does it make to a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 10-year-old? So tough love, It's interesting you chose that word.
Yeah. I wouldn't say I'm a big tough love fan, but I really believe that it's critical. You know, I'm not much of a homeschool kind of guy. My wife, on the other hand, she's like, we should homeschool our kids. And I'm like, well, I can kind of see where you're going with that. But part of me is like, you're going to be out in the world with everybody else. You know, it helps to have those types of real world skills, being able to communicate and talk and, you know what's out there. You know, you wouldn't send your kids off into the jungles, you know, in South America and not teach them anything about survival. You know, it's like you're just sending them out there as sheep among wolves, I guess. You know, it helps to understand, like, there are wolves out there. There are people that, you know, may hurt your feelings. And how do you deal with that? And it's not to say that I want to hurt my kids' feelings, but I really want to not necessarily toughen them up, but, you know, help their skin get a little thicker. You know, it's like, okay, if you're going to go out there, somebody might say something that's going to hurt your feelings. That's okay. You know, you have to learn to understand, how do you process that? How do you deal with that and still come away being yourself and feeling good about yourself? You know, it's like Tyler punches you in the gut with comments about your podcast. It's like, okay, I'm still good. I'm not going to walk away and be like, I'm going to cancel this show.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think while I did maybe punch you in the gut there.
No, you didn't. I'm just trying to ham it up here for comedic effect.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I challenged you to say, is this a hobby or is this something you want to do? And a hobby we do when we can and we get enjoyment out of it. And that's fine. If you have hobbies, have them. There are things that I like I like to play basketball and I play it every chance I get. But I don't put time, energy, and effort into it on the regular. I don't try to get any better than I am. And as I listen to your podcast and your intent behind what I've assumed so far, the challenge is this a hobby or is this something you want to put more energy behind and be real about it?
I'm kind of on the fence, man. I feel like... like part of me wants to be on the side of the fence of like, let's do something better with this. But the motivational aspect of it's kind of been sitting on the side of like the hobby. It's like, oh, it's just a hobby. And I mean, and, you know, being truthful as I always am, you know, the no BS part of me is like, maybe I'm just lazy. You know, I'm just like I'm not committed to doing more with a podcast than just approaching it casually. And ever since you and I talked, I feel like I want to do more. You know, like video for me was like taboo. I'm like, oh, I don't want to do that. You know, it's like I'm gonna show my face on camera and people are gonna be like, you know, look at him, blah, you know, all these negative aspects. But you know, I started watching, you know, a lot of times whenever I'm caught with a challenge, you know, I'm like, let's just go get educated. Like, just try to educate yourself, dig into as much knowledge as you can to try and figure it out. And there's this one YouTube guy that was giving advice to fellow YouTubers. And he's like, most people don't care. He's like, they don't care. They don't care what you look like. You know, they're just, you know, they're here for the content. And so something about that resonated with me. And so, you know, I'm pushing myself in the video. So we're doing video for this. Like all our future podcasts are video. So I'm trying really hard to put it over the fence. Let's jump over the fence. Let's get into like, let's do this the right way. Let's try to make something out of it as opposed to being a hobby. So I'm not saying I'm there yet, but I'm trying hard, Tyler.
Yeah, well, I think every entrepreneur and every employee at some point kind of feels that they have a plan, a vision, a dream. And a lot of times I get to talk about those subjects. But today, you know, you talk about children, you talk about your kids and how we teach our children and what's going on in their world. But there's so many life lessons that we can actually learn from our children and pass along down to them. For example, right now you're treating this as kind of a hobby, and think about all the stuff our children treat as hobbies and that they don't turn it into something. And, you know, we're not truly giving our best to our children if we're not being the best version of ourselves, if we're not pursuing our dreams. Because how could you tell your son or your daughter, you know, you can be anything, you can do whatever you want, yet your son or daughter look back at you and say, well, why aren't you? And here you are with this podcast, which, by the way, kudos to you. It inspired me and motivated me. I said, man, this nobody, using your words from earlier, this nobody in the beginning, you know, from Alaska, is doing a podcast and he's talking about his life. And it inspired me, Thomas. It did. That's why I kind of grabbed you in Puerto Rico, because, like, man, you're just laying it all out there. You're putting it out there when so many people would have fear prevent them. And you may not be treating it like a business, but you're still doing it. And that's more than most people, because they don't take that action. So you're showing your kids, you know, action, which is huge. And, you know, if you just simply define success for the podcast, help your children understand what success looks like. It's a great example of taking action on a hobby or taking action on something you want to pursue to be more. But either way, I think you're inspiring your children by what you're doing. You inspired me to say, man, it just pushed me to keep getting more comfortable with the uncomfortable myself. And it is why I reached out to you. And I wanted to come on here and I wanted to say it on air and say that any of these listeners, or even if no one listens, the fact that you're willing to record your life, share your stories, share your heartache, share your, you know, situation with your firstborn, that hopefully inspires others to share with their friends, with their family. They don't have to share online, but just share with a friend. And when you let that out and you communicate, it's just so powerful. And today I'm really excited to not talk about business, right? We're going to talk about our children and how we set them up to be successful in life. And also challenge you to decide if what you're going to do with this podcast here and why you started it, which I think is the next question. Why and when did you start You're Not My Father?
Well, you know, I probably have talked about this in a past podcast, and if I contradict myself, then I'm going to just say that this is the de facto version.
Life but, evolves.
Right. Yeah. Perspective change. My memory.
Yeah.
I want to say it was somewhere around the pandemic time. It could have been during the pandemic, early pandemic. I'm kind of a wannabe musician, and I make no bones about it. I am not going to turn that into anything professional. So don't challenge me, Tyler. Don't you do that to me. Don't challenge me to become a professional musician. But I really like music. I've always liked music. I've always liked multimedia. I've had, you know, microphones and stuff like that. And my daughter Sophia, one time she came up to me. She's like, hey, we could do some videos or something, or, you know, some podcast or whatever. Cause it was something like I watched, you know, we're sitting at home and we'd watch YouTube and people would be doing that type of thing. And I was like, yeah, we could, let's try that out. So, I just kind of cobbled together some of the stuff I had, and we did a couple of podcasts, and it was kind of cool. One of the things that I think that, you know, in the beginning was, you know, I think it was just more of like a tongue-in-cheek kind of thing. You know, you're not my father. You know, it's like you're not my father. You know, it's like something. What was it? Star Wars. You know, Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. You know, people think that he said, you know, you're not my father. You know, what he said was, that can't be true. It's impossible. Search your feelings. You know what to be true. You know, I am your father. You know, it was just kind of something kind of off cuff, just kind of funny or whatever. And then I just kind of started drinking my own Kool-Aid and was like, you know, maybe this could be something, you know, maybe it is some kind of fatherly advice or something like that.
What kind of feelings as you knew that you enjoyed the technical side? That's what I heard you just say, right? You're like, I'm capable. I would enjoy this. And Now we're going into You're Not My Father's, how you titled it. But what were you feeling at the thought? Do you have a history of like putting yourself out to the world, you know, showing them who you are, posting videos? What feelings did you have about sharing your personal life with anyone who listens?
I'm kind of a history buff in some ways. Actually, let me walk that back. I'm like a history scholar. I'm not going to say like I'm an expert, but maybe I'm kind of an authority in some ways. You know, not just from, you know, a random history type of thing, but, you know, maybe my own family history. So I do a lot of genealogy research and trying to collect stories from my own family's perspective. And one of my biggest regrets, and it's not a regret that I can control, but my grandfather died before I was born, both of them. And so I never got to know any of them. And so my grandmother would tell me all these stories about him and whatnot. And kind of long story short, I've been so, I wouldn't say obsessed, but like just so heavily interested in where I came from and what transpired with my family. And, you know, my dad wasn't always around, and, you know, he didn't really kind of tell us a whole lot of stuff. Sometimes he would. And I felt like I wanted that voice to kind of echo out there a little bit. I remember when I was a kid, I was born in Australia. My parents were both in the Navy. And at one point we ended up back in the United States, and Dad was, I think he was in Diego Garcia, which is like this small little island or archipelago or atoll south of India. It's where our nuclear bombers are and whatever. And he was working there, and he would send these audio recordings. And I remember like playing on these reel to reel things. This is back in like the 70s. I'm like this little kid, and I'm hearing my dad's voice, and he's kind of chronicling, you know, kind of what's going on. I don't remember the story specifically. I just remember that Dad did that. And so part of me was like, how cool would that be to have something, you know, perpetually, not just for my kids, but, you know, maybe their kids too, you know, like what if, heaven forbid, like I die before they have kids, they'll never know who I am outside of some photos and some other random stuff. But it'd be a way to like kind of share my stories and whatever knowledge I have for my kids and their kids, and, you know, ad infinitum on out.
Yeah. So did I just basically, I'm going to kind of summarize that up, that there, I didn't hear any fears or concerns, because your focus was on creating recorded history and thoughts that would live beyond you for your children and their children. And that way they always have, you know, Papa Thomas's voice, or great Papa, Papa Thomas's, great, great Papa Thomas's, you know, voice, where they could listen into and say, okay, you know, I pick up a little nugget. Is that what I heard? Did I hear that right?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that I'm afraid from it, because I put it in the context of history. If I didn't have any kind of historical thought or motivation behind it, I'd be scared of my mind to do it, because, you know, it's like, why would you do this? Why would somebody do that? But I think with the purpose, you know, it kind of drives me, because it's like core values, like in a business. It's like, I don't have to worry about the why. My core values tell me why. And, you know, this is the purpose of why we're here. And so for me, it's like, that is my purpose. You know, I don't really care if somebody doesn't really like it or gets offended by it or calls me stupid or whatever. I know I'm being honest. You know, this is me. You know, this is it. You know, this is, historically speaking, this is what I did in my life. Whether it was entertaining or valuable or something, it's kind of like a documentary. You know, the documentary doesn't have to be entertaining, but at the very least, it's factual, I guess.
When you go into each episode, do you prepare the message that you want? You know, it sounds like you're really recording this primarily for your own children in the future. and the fact that you didn't have the advice, you know, you didn't have the father figure, right? To lead you through this. So you want to be there for your kids, but anyone who doesn't have that voice. Preparation do you do, if any, for the message you want to send each episode?
Some episodes I'm very much into the preparation element of it, like, you know, okay, I'm gonna, yeah, in some of our previous podcasts, it's like something funny, something witty, here's what kind of what's going on, here's an update, and then kind of wrapping it up into something meaningful at the end, almost kind of like a PSA. Like, did you ever watch G.I. Joe?
Oh yeah, it's
like,
for sure.
It's like, it was entertaining, you know, lasers were being shot, things got blown up, nobody ever got hurt. And at the end, you know, they kind of tied it up with like, in today's episode, Cobra Commander learned a valuable lesson, you know, and, you know, yeah, kind of like one of those old school kind of thought mentality. So sometimes maybe I have that kind of pushed out there in my mind. And then sometimes it's just more me getting stuff off my chest. So it's kind of more like an oral diary, I guess, if you will. And, but I always kind of feel like I owe it to the audience, the podcast, whoever's listening, that there's something that I kind of drop that is beneficial. You know, it's like, oh, okay, well, you had the dessert first, because that's all the entertaining stuff. And then it's like at the end, you've got like a down home cooked meal that nourishes your soul in some way. Hopefully, maybe I'm giving myself too much importance, but that's kind of how I feel.
Well, on the G.I. Joe front, I think I enjoyed my childhood playing with G.I. Joes, a Lens, and, you know, what do we call it? You know, Cowboys and Indians at the time. Wonder if we can still do that today with our kids, but I really enjoyed the G.I. Joe toys. You know, I had all the arms. Yeah. I did not enjoy as much the movie. It let me down, and I don't think they could have probably done it in any way that would have like met my expectations, because I think my imagination as a young kid in G.I. Joe's and wars and, you know, what battles a G.I. Joe would face, you know, they needed to bring in some kids when they wrote that script. And if they would have did a kid movie, that would have resonated a lot more than the way they did do it.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I don't know, the movie had some cool elements, but the whole Cobra Law thing with like, okay, they're all insects and reptiles and stuff. It, to me, that they kind of lost me in that. It was weird. It was weird enough to be like, okay, it made you think, but you know, just it wasn't what you were expecting.
Not what I expect, man. I played G.I. Joe's. That was war. That was worldly war. That was, you know, you had the Joe who kind of like the Spartan, and you know, in what's that Xbox, they have the one guy who's better than everyone else. Halo. Halo. Yeah. And you know, the G.I. Joe was that, right? The G.I. Joe came in and did the impossible and turned the tide. And I was looking, you know, that was my imagination.
Yeah, the hero. You're the hero of the story. There's a clearly defined bad guy, and it's I forget who the author is, but it's a really great book. It's The Hero's Journey, and it's something that a lot of movies and shows and historical epics are based off of, everywhere from like Gilgamesh and Beowulf all the way to Star Wars or whatever. But you've got that circular kind of hero's journey type of thing. And I feel like we all kind of feel like we're the hero of our own story. And we kind of have to go through that process of, you know, failure and redemption, and you know, we kind of come out of the end of it, you know, educated, knowledgeable, and triumphant over whatever that problem was. And if this is the deepest conversation that anybody's had about G.I. Joe, I don't know what it is.
Oh man, I had a deep conversation about hair loss the other day. Like, it was so philosophical, authority, or whatever.
Actually, I would say I'm an expert.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, real quick on that, we're gonna We're going to put this out there on the air. I've been going back and forth on LinkedIn with a gentleman who was interested in a role in technology. And he reached out to me, and it was about the beards and long hair posts that I made. And he talked about, you know, he has no hair and, you know, being your authentic self. And then we got into the subject of if you modify yourself. He said, well, I guess I could get hair transplant, right? But then I wouldn't be myself. And then we got into the idea of, well, is changing your physical appearance really changing who you are on the inside? It's really about the intention. Like, you could get hair implants and still be your authentic self if you're true to yourself, if you're not putting your value based on your looks. But it may help to have the confidence that you used to feel when you had hair. And then that turned into, you know, really, it's all the same. Like, I have this long hair today. Well, I'll lose it someday, or I'll shave it and cut it someday, or it'll go thin. And if you're bald, you know, you once had hair. We all had it. So it's just really about a transition of how we value ourselves and who we are. And right now I'm this long haired, crazy, you know, wearing these are my son's glasses. And I'm going to showcase a story later I wanted to tell about why I got the lights on and stuff. But it's a transition in life. And when you lose your hair, Thomas, it's a mental challenge. And when it starts thinning, it's a mental challenge. And when things change in what you were good at and you no longer are good at, or what you did have and you no longer have, that is a transition that you mentally have to go through and accept. And so even though we were chuckling about beards and long hair, and it was crazy that we turned beards and long hair into talking about the change of our minds and accepting who we are through long hair or having no hair. It was interesting. I just want to put that out on the air out there, that as you change in life, especially your children, having someone there to help guide you through it, be your support, makes a difference. And when did you lose your hair?
Oh my God, this is a great story. So I have pretty thick hair, so where it is, so like these sides, I mean, it's pretty thick. Just not right here. But when I was in high school, my Spanish teacher, Mr. Wilson Hall, I don't know if he's still alive or not. He wasn't really a great teacher, but he was a great confidant, you know, in class. And one day he looked at me and he was like, he just kind of looked like just looking at my hairline. And, you know, I'm like, my hair was like down here. And he was like, yeah, you're going to go bald. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, it's going to happen. You know, yeah, it's going to happen to you. And so like, that was just kind of one of those echoes in my head for years. And it kind of got me started being paranoid. And, you know, gradually throughout the years, you know, my hairline started to kind of recede and go back. And, you know, at some point I just kind of owned it. You know, I shaved my head at one point. That was cool because it was like, okay, like, you've transitioned, you've gone to the other side, like, you've got no hair. It's like, okay.
Were you thinking hair? Like, I always knew this would happen. Well, what were you thinking? Cause the teacher, he planted that seed.
Part of me was like, was that some kind of psychosomatic physiological response that like I willed it into existence, you know? But, I look at pictures of my grandfather and
so part of you blames yourself for having no hair.
You know,
that's funny. I just had to reframe it for you just so you heard it. Yeah. The
superstitious
part. You manifested it.
Yeah.
Oh man. I want to turn this into something what I feel is so meaningful for this. You know, it's about being a dad and what children go through. I have a similar story. I was 17. I was at the Gap. I was shopping at the Gap, and I was with two of my friends, Nathan and Dan. And in high school, you know, I was fit. I was a fit guy in high school, and Dan was skinny, like super, super lean and skinny. And Nate was thick, not super thick, but a bigger guy. Right. That's it. We had all three, and out of nowhere, this woman comes up to the three of us. And she spits some hard truths right there. And I, all three of us, I guarantee you remember this today. And she said, look to me, you're in your prime. Enjoy it. You will be fat. And looked at, and she looked at Dan and the skinny guy. You know, this is a real story, man. I'll never forget it. She looked at him and said, you know, don't worry. You're small today, but you will always be fit. You'll be lean. You'll appreciate these genetics later in life. And, you know, she looked at Nate and she was like, you're going to be huge. You're going to be huge. I mean, it was just like, damn, like what, like, where did this come from? Why did she do it?
And did she just walk away afterwards?
Yeah. Yes, she did. Wow. Yes, she did. And the three of us were shooting. Like, oh man, you know, you can't even send your children to Gap without them getting mind screwed. You know, like we left that in, you know, I'll be honest with you, Nate, as he got older, he took fitness serious. He worked out. He was a fit guy. He looked great. You know, he's a bigger guy. And there was a phase where he got really big and then he got super fit. And, you know, it's a battle that you watch him, you know, watch him fight. And he has owned it, right? And I got a pretty good dad bod going. I stopped working out. You know, I got that good old 40-plus inch waist going for a while. You know, and, you know, gut.
Yeah.
I didn't have to buy pants that size, but it's far cry from when I was young. And then there's Dan, who's, you know, ripped. He was holding spoons in his abs when we were in high school, but he was tiny. And now he's still holding spoons and he's, you know, just, he didn't eat anything. And the lady was so right. She was so right. But it created a lot of insecurities, you know, for all of us, I think. And it was an impact that we probably could have not experienced. And that's what I wanted to turn this around. Like, you had doubt from your teacher. And what we tell our children when they're young impacts their confidence at their core for the rest of their lives. And, you know, we obviously get to a point in life where we accept who we are, ideally most of us. But for our children, how are you building confidence in your kids?
So one of my, I think, next to last podcasts, I was talking about, you know, raising your kids and universal advice. I feel like every kid is different. Actually, I'm just going to say it, like, every kid is different. They all kind of require a different way of raising them. It's like my daughter, Sophia, she's got a lot of me in her. Like, she's very smart. She's very introspective. I think she's very sarcastic in a lot of ways. You know, she's got a skeptical mind. For a long time, I would say she was fragile with her kind of demeanor. But, you know, at school, there were some girls, like, she used to wear princess dresses at school. Like, she just wanted to do that. And she loved it. And we encouraged it. It's like, hey, you want to wear a princess dress? You want to dress like Elsa? You want to be whatever? All right, yeah, let's do it. And for a time, it was pretty good. And then there was some girl at school who really just decided to lay into her and tell her dresses were stupid and all this other stuff. And it kind of, you know, it took her down a few notches. And she was sad. And she was intimidated to go back to school. And, you know, it took a little bit of doing to kind of get her back out of that. So, you know, nowadays, like, I'm very cautious about what I say with her. You know, I'm much more encouraging with certain things. And if I'm going to say something, not necessarily negative, but I try to say it in a very fashionable way of like, here's how you can improve, that type of thing. Now, my son Conan, on the other hand, he needs to be knocked down a few steps. Like, he's like, my wife says that, he's one of those, like, he'll succeed and we don't want to take the wind out of his sails because he's just, indomitable. Like his spirit is like, he's like you, Tyler. He's like, I'm going to push through and I'm going to keep going. And it doesn't matter who's in my way. It's like, if there's a brick wall, I'm going to go through the brick wall. And so I feel I've like I need some,
I saw posts that you've put of him and I got that feeling. He seems that way.
I mean, I always feel like I need to knock him down a few steps to try to ground him in reality. And, you know, I think, you know, as a father to a son, like you kind of have to toughen him up a little bit because that's kind of like the society that we're in. Like guys are, you know, we express love and affection in many ways that are from an outside perspective. You're like, oh man, these people hate each other. And then you listen to the context and the tone. You're like, oh no, no, no. They love each other. That's just how they talk. And so you know, it's a little bit of tough love, but it's also like indoctrinating him into like, this is kind of how we do things. You know, this is the tribe of guys.
How do you balance knocking him down, but not knocking down his confidence?
You know, I'm very careful to point out things that he did a good job for, that are not so obvious to him. Be like, good job, buddy. That was awesome. That was great. You did a great job there. So I just don't want him to get cocky and arrogant to the point where, you know, it affects him to where it, like mentally, like he can't distinguish between what he feels and what's appropriate. Cause he's had some of those challenges where it's like, I wanted it. And therefore I'm just going to take it. It's like, no. It's like, I want him to not be rude. It's like, we're polite. We're caring. We're compassionate. You can feel like you're the best at this, but always remember that you need to be considerate of other people. You need to look out for other people. And so he has a lot of challenges with awareness of other people, but like he's such a sweetheart sometimes. Like he'll do things for me or for his sister or for my wife that are just like, he's just a sweetheart. And like, that's the times where I'm like, I'm so proud of you. Like he was so caring. He was so compassionate. And it's like those types of things, like I'm hoping he's learning from me or from other people. And so maybe it's not really intentionally pushing something on him, but it's more of like love by example. It's like the love languages, whatever those love languages are, acts of service, you know, touching, physical touch or whatever. It's like showing that you love and care about people. So I think that's probably what I do with him. I'm trying to knock him off the high part, but I'm still showing him love every step of the way. Like, why did I do that? Because I love you.
Is it, you know, what I kind of took away from that is you're trying to ensure that he's humble.
Yeah.
In his confidence, that he's humble with his approach with others and his care for others while pursuing, you know, his own desires.
Yeah. You know, be, have good intentions behind it, you know, like, you know, don't try to think about yourself so much. Think about what you can give. Think about what you can do for somebody else. You know, it has its own reward.
How have you been helping your children learn that? Well, first of all, how, you know, tell anyone who's listening for the first time how old your kids are today.
So Conan's, he's 9 and then Sophia's 14. And I think one of the best things that we've done for our kids was kind of twofold. And almost kind of liken it to some kind of martial arts type of mentality, because some of it was martial arts. So my daughter, she was pretty disrespectful whenever she was younger. She was just, she's also very cocky and arrogant, and just very disrespectful to us. You know, at one point I was like, you know, I always wanted to be in the martial arts when I was a kid, but you know, where I grew up at, like it was, you know, I didn't have a McDonald's in my hometown. Like we had a couple of gas stations and a grocery store and that was it. You know, there was not much culture going on in this little area of Northwest Florida. And, not to say anything bad about that town, but I just can't really say much good about it. But
yeah,
I really had a true respect and love for martial arts. And so I found an after school program here in Anchorage that did Taekwondo. So you pick up your kids from school. So it was kind of a twofold purpose. It was like they took care of them until we got off at work, but they also learned something instead of just keeping them locked in a room somewhere watching TV or playing video games. They were actually learning respect and physical fitness and martial arts. And so Sophia went on to become a second degree black belt in Taekwondo. So that was, I was so incredibly proud of her. Conan, he was taking lessons. He didn't get that far, but he developed a lot of confidence and respect. But outside of that, you know, really taking them to church. You know, I don't try to get too religious on my show, but I feel like it's more and more of a recurring theme. But my son has benefited from not just my spiritual avenue and knowledge, which is not great by any means or standards, but from all the other men at the church and other people at the church who have taken it on to mentor and guide him in different activities like Awanas and other things. It has been a remarkable change for him. Like, he really is that compassionate and believes it. He's not just, it's not lip service to me. It's not like he's saying it to please me. It's like, he believes it. Like, he has that love and compassion. And my daughter doesn't have that yet. I think religion has kind of, she's still skeptical in some ways, but I'll tell you, Tyler, she went to Washington DC on this close-up trip the other day. It was for school. It's a program where they show you government and, you know, history and stuff like that. Well, I would have loved to have gone on that. But before we left, you know, we pray whenever we eat, and she's kind of fidgety when it comes to praying, you know, at the dinner table. Like, she's just, I feel like she always doesn't know what to say or how to act or whatever. And normally I don't really try to pressure into too many different things or whatever. And so I was holding my wife's hand. I think I was holding Conan's hand, or I forget which one it was. I had an open hand. And, you know, we were praying and I felt this hand sneak into mine, and she squeezed my hand, and I was just like, it was just this incredible moment. But even more than that was, she squeezed my hand 3 times. And I don't expect you to know what that means, but it's something that, it's kind of like a sign language, not a sign language. It's like a,
in my family, it's the same. If I squeeze or they squeeze, it's I love you. 1, 2, 3 for me.
1, 2, 3. Yeah. I love you. And it's that nonverbal communication. And I don't know if she's ever done that to me ever. And it meant so much to me, Tyler. I was like, wow. Like, it was an incredibly powerful moment. And I don't cry in front of my kids typically. You know, me and my wife have had, you know, a handful of fights, and they've seen me cry or something like that. It's been a long time ago, but yeah, in that moment I was just so overjoyed.
Right at the table.
And
that's amazing.
Yeah, kind of, you know, I think she was a little concerned about her trip and stuff like that. So I didn't want to get emotional with her too much. Yeah, you know, kind of shifted into the gear I know best, which is like, how can I help make you at ease so you've got a great, easy flight and prepare you and stuff like that. But man, it's one of those memories like I will take to the grave, like 1,000%. Like, it's up there in that top 5 moments ever. Like, the Oscars are on tonight. it's like if you didn't mean that, man, you're the best actress I've ever seen. Got me. It's awesome.
Let me ask you another question. you know, just kind of jumping around. You sometimes talk about your oldest son, right?
Yeah.
And you are sharing advice. I think you're qualified. You have an, you know, what's the 8 and 14-year-old? 9, 14-year-old. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we really become qualified by our own experiences. Doesn't make us experts, but if we've been through something, we can talk about it. What's it been like not being there every day for your firstborn, but being there every day for the other two?
You know, it sucks. You know, if you've never listened to the show before, I've got 3 kids. One that I've never met in person, never really talked to on the phone ever. I just kind of, you know, you'll have to go back and listen to another episode, but, you know, for lack of a better term, we've been estranged for all his life. Yeah, I didn't really know he was mine until right before my daughter was born, which was, yeah, that was a mind blow. But, yeah, I've gotten to know him a little bit here and there. You know, he's graduated high school, and, you know, part of this show, this podcast, is, you know, a hope, you know, a prayer that, you know, if something happens, because my dad passed away, you know, after I started talking to him, and, you know, it was a shame that dad couldn't have met him in person. Yeah, I tried to facilitate it, but, you know, just didn't happen. Yeah, we don't have much time. You know, if something happens to me, you know, heaven forbid, you know, today or, you know, tomorrow or in a few years or whatever, you know, what do I leave behind? You know, I've got all this stuff here, and I would trade it all. I'd trade my house, I'd trade all my cars, I'd trade my career for my family, because none of this means anything to me. You know, our worldly possessions, you know, we're just stewards of it. You know, you can't take any of it with you. It doesn't really belong to you. And I mean that, like, it doesn't belong to you. You've got it for a certain amount of time. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't take it with you. And with your oldest, diving into it, I mean, there's a lot of people out there without a dad who isn't recording their thoughts and feelings to leave behind for when a child wants to hear them, or maybe listening to today in your case, because he's older and he's graduated high school. But what was that like when you found out, you know, you have a son, but you're not allowed in his life?
You know, it's to say it in probably an unelegant way, is it's like you have a, it's like kind of you give birth to a child and then it gets taken away from you. It's like you instantly care for this person and then you're instantly heartbroken that relationship is not there. Yeah, it made me upset in the beginning because, you know, how the systems work with child support and whatever, they literally do not care about you having a relationship with your son or your child whatsoever. All they want is to get paid, and they're not mediators or anything in that regards. I mean, it's just like you need to pay. Whenever I went and did the DNA thing, they fingerprinted me. They took photos of me. I felt like I was getting processed to go to prison. They wouldn't even let me pay for child support. Like, they instantly just garnished it out of my paycheck. Like I wasn't going to do the right thing. It was really like, I felt like I was guilty, and it really just kind of put a dark cloud over everything. And it was like,
yeah,
it was like, how do you start a relationship with a child that you didn't know that was yours? And then this is how it starts. And it's like, you can't talk to him. And like most people out there probably that have been in a similar position, you know, his mother was just combative, just, you know, Like I was very much of like, you know, hey, I would like to do this. And I think in the beginning she was open to it, and it just quickly devolved into like an emotional response. Like, you know, you're a bad person and I don't want you involved in my son's life. And it's like, how do you know? Like, it's been, I think at that point in time, it was like 7 years since I'd seen her or something like that. And it's like, how do you know? I mean, it's like, if I want to be in my son's life, is that makes me bad? Or, I mean, just from my perspective, I would like to think that most people would, if a father wants to be in a child's life, isn't that a good thing? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like I'm a criminal or somebody horrible. I'm just, to paraphrase Boba Fett, I'm just a man trying to make my way through the galaxy. You know, I'm just the salt of the earth type of person. I'm not, there's nothing really special about me, but there's nothing really bad about me either. So it's like, wouldn't you want to have, you know, a father in life? And ultimately, I understand where she was coming from. She wanted to protect her son. And, you know, it's that fear of the unknown. It's the same fear that we all have everywhere. You know, we don't know what's going to happen, and we're afraid of it. And therefore we try to push it away. And, you know, I think that's kind of the root of so many different things. You know, one of my biggest fears is dying. And the fear of the unknown is this thing that it bothers me. I think my pastor called it annihilationism, you know, that you just are destroyed and there's nothing there. And I guess we all kind of have that fear of the unknown. So
your I've son
so lost on this train of thought. You're gonna have to guide me back to where.
No, I'm gonna guide you. No. It's just, you know, I listened to your podcast. I really wanted to come on here and just hear your thoughts and ask the questions that were really going through my brain when I was listening to your episodes. Try and get clarity on those. And
yeah,
you were right down the path of figuring out, you know, what now, what today are you doing with your son, who's now, you know, a man, right? He's graduated high school. He's makes his own decisions. And, you know, he grew up not knowing his biological father very well. And, you know, the way you treat your two kids in Alaska, you know, what you're doing here and the intent, hopefully that he'll listen. And I've heard you say it. I hope you're out there listening. I'm wondering, what have you tried? You know, what advice would you give yourself right now if you were me, if you're someone else looking at your situation, and what would you tell yourself? It's kind of an odd question, but let me reframe it. Let's look at it this way. You have the experience of not having a relationship with a son that you didn't know was there until later in life, and you're heartbroken over that. You can tell. And you throw yourself even more into your own two children to ensure they don't feel that way. But you have an older son who didn't get that love, especially from you. And now he's 18. Now he can make his own decisions. He's an adult, and your relationship still is non-existent. And so if someone, knowing all of that, and now you ask yourself for advice, like, how do I make this better? What actions, what advice would you give yourself?
Man, that's a great question. Yeah, if I was to step outside of my body and try to tell myself the hard truth about the whole thing is, you know, try harder, you know, do whatever it is that you can. But understand that, you know, this is a person who has their own life. You know, you can't control them. Like my kids, I've got control over because they depend on me. You know, like if I screw up at work or if I do something stupid in life or whatever, they're all going to get affected by it. So, you know, I have to be careful with them, but you know, it's, they're ultimately my responsibility. Him, even whenever he was a kid, you know, I didn't try hard enough. I mean, I could have tried a whole lot more. I just, honestly, you know, what it came down to was a money thing. You know, I was like, yeah, I moved to Alaska and, you know, we're still trying to get on our feet. And here's my, what I think is my firstborn. And then all of a sudden I get this paperwork show up on my doorstep like a week before.
Wow.
And it's like, on top of that, you owe like 20 grand or whatever it was.
Wow.
You know, and it's like, I'm just trying to make ends meet. I mean, how do I do this? You know, he's in Alabama, you know, he's, you know, 6,000 miles away. You know, I'm trying to take care of my family here. And, you know, the sacrifice that I made was like, I have to take care of my family here. Like I can't do both. And
yeah, you couldn't control the decisions that, you know, his mother made. And I'm sure your decisions would have been vastly different had you not already anchored in Alaska, you know, Anchorage, just to have a little pun there, you'd yeah, anchored in. And now you got thrown, yeah, a curveball. And that's really, you know, what I want to know is, you went through it. It was a money thing, but let's say somebody is, that's what this show is about, advice. Let's say somebody right now out there just found themselves in the same situation. Dive into for me that heartfelt advice that you would give someone who just found out they have a child and that child's already born.
I mean, if you can afford it, I mean, and when I say afford, like it's not going to ruin you. I'm not saying like, oh, I can't watch Netflix anymore. I can't have this boat or I can't have the third car or whatever. Like, if it's not going to break you, do it. Do what it takes to be involved in your child's life. I mean, if I'd had that kind of, like at this point in life, you know, I feel like we're blessed financially and that we're in a good spot. If it had happened right now, I would have done it. I would have lawyered up. I would have been flying to Alabama on a regular basis. I would have fought, you know, and you know, the day is going to happen, possibly maybe, where he's going to be like, well, why didn't you do that for me? And I'm hoping that this is a testament of, you know, it's not an excuse, but this is what happened. But absolutely get in there, fight for it. Don't make a mess of it. There's no reason to, you know, get into some kind of knockdown, drag out fight and say bad words to each other, you know, parent to parent. But just show up, be there, be respectful, you know, but it's a fight. You know, you have to show up. You have to take some blows. You're going to get knocked down, but you got to just show that determination to be there for your child, because that is what it's about. If somebody comes knocking on my door and they're going to take my kids away from me, I'm not going to just say, have at them. I mean, there might be a couple days where I'm like, here, let me get the bag. But, you know, realistically, it's like, no, it's just not going to happen, you know. And, you know, if it's,
so what would you say, let's say money, like money can be worked out, right?
Yeah.
You know, you didn't have the money, but let's say money could, you could do something, you could move, you know, let's say your wife says, let's go, we're going to live near, you know, your firstborn that we didn't know about. And he's what, maybe 7 at the time, 8. He's pretty young. Like that. You know, and those are important years. You know, obviously you have a lot of emotions going on, you know, you and your wife, your daughter, you know, your strange son, the his mother, which is probably has you infuriated, I imagine, at the time that, you know, her decisions. have led you sad. To this moment.
I don't think she made me mad. I think it just, it made me so sad.
That's a great feeling. So
it was like a depression.
What advice would you give? Like, why is it important to have fought? You know, do you regret not fighting? I mean, do you regret it? And why would you do it different? And why someone going through separation today, why would you tell them they should fight?
I mean, it's just like anything to do with your kids. I mean, they depend on you to make the judgment, you know, like you're the shepherd to those sheep, you know, like they need you. And I think God has a perfect plan. You know, you have a father and you have a mother, you know, there's a reason why that exists. You know, it was all part of the plan in the beginning, and kids need a father and a mother. And so you need to be there for them. You need to fight that fight, whether the mother agrees or not. But yeah, I regret it. I mean, if, you know, if anybody else just jump in there and do it, it's worth it. You know, I'm not going to go back in time and change anything. Number one, I don't have a time machine. And number two, that's not God's plan, but it's been God's plan this entire time, you know? And it still is, but yeah, regretfully, you know, I wish I could have done something. I wish I had done something, you know, it's like I'm talking about being on the fence. I was on the other side of the fence. I was like, I can't do this. I don't know how. Yeah. And I think that's one of the, I'm not going to say great things about my show, but I think it's a beneficial thing for our show is like, you know, when I was talking about trying to get to the other side of the fence, I tried to educate myself. I'm still trying to educate myself and try to find out the answers to how do I do that? Because ultimately it's a fear thing. I don't know how to do it. It's the unknown. I'm afraid of it. I don't know. But it's when you educate yourself, you empower yourself with those tools and that education, whether that's somebody else's advice or mentoring, that's powerful to you to be able to jump over to the other side and do it. And I didn't have a good father figure in my life. I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have people that had my back that, you know, had been in a similar situation. So surround yourself with people that are good people, you know, find yourself good mentors, you know, educate yourself, arm yourself with that knowledge, you know, to be able to tackle that. But beyond that, you know, foster some kind of intelligence within yourself that this is how you accomplish things. If you don't know how to do it, find out, you know, be determined, be like Conan, be like Tyler. I'm going to do it. I'm going to jump in there. I'm going to keep on going. I'm just going to knock all this stuff out of the way. I'm just going to keep going until it's done. Have that passion and determination about your family and God.
What did you know, what lessons do you feel like it's God's plan? So it worked, yeah. You know, what are the pros that have come out to be a better person? If it did,
it's hard to say that it's made me a better person. You know, I don't want to say that, you know, hey, I wasn't in my son's life and I'm better for it. But like the lessons learned from it is that, you know, I respect him. I respect his decision. And I'm not going to give him an ultimatum and say, you know, either you can talk to me on the phone or you can do this or you're not going to be in my life. You know, it's given me a very humbleness and compassion of like, if you don't want to talk to me, that's fine. I'll be here when you are ready. You know, I'll always be here for you. Whether you acknowledge me or you despise me, whether you hate me or you love me, you know, it's that unconditional love of like, I'll be here. This is what I've got to give you. I don't have much, but you'll always have that. And if you take advantage of it in this life or the next, it's still here. That's all I've got.
What a powerful statement, Thomas. It's probably favorite part of the day right there for me. You know, you, wow. You're there.
Don't we all need
that? Even though you're not today. Yeah.
Don't we all need somebody like that in our lives? Like, my kids need that. And I am that. My wife needs that. And I am that, except whenever she's yelling at me. I just need to go take a break. Be like, I'll come back.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I feel like one of the underlying mission statements of my podcast is to, I want people to feel like they can have that place with me in this podcast. I know it sounds weird. It sounds crazy that, you know, like, hey, you're just some random guy, but it's like I feel like I understand people enough to where it's like, you've done something bad, you've done something good. It doesn't matter. You know, ultimately it's Christ. You know, Christ loves you. You know, he's always willing to be there for you, but maybe in this way of this podcast is just like, I'm your virtual dad. I'm not your father, but I'm your virtual daddy. I don't know. So sounds weird and whatever, but you know, it's a respect. It's a love thing, because you know, there's so many people out there that don't have that. And so I feel like my son, who doesn't have the benefit of my experience, that doesn't understand or isn't choosing to use the love and compassion I have, that there's other people out there that could use that in some
there
way.
There are. Do you believe that your son knows? Does he know you're there? Does he know you're willing to be there?
It's going to sound stupid. I mean, the only way that we've communicated is on Facebook Messenger. And he's responded, and, you know, I've said as much to him, and I hope that that's understood by him. You know, from what I can tell in his social media, you know, he's an 18-year-old boy. He's got certain activities that he's wanting to pursue, and I understand that. And I'm not trying to divert him, you know, like, don't do that, and, you know, come to the dark side, we've got cookies, whatever. It's like, you know, enjoy life, enjoy that time that you've got. The prodigal son,
you know,
it's like, you're going to go out and you're going to make mistakes or whatever, but whenever you want to come back, it's like, here's the robe, here's the ring, let's kill that fatted calf. You know, I'll give you everything because you came home, because you were dead, and now you're part of my life. You know, you weren't a part of my life. Now you are.
Try harder. That's what you said.
Yeah.
When you gave yourself advice. Could you try harder today?
I can. I could. But part of me is today, now, that's where I'm unsure. I'm unsure how much I should try to ram this love and compassion down some 18-year-old kid's throat who I've never talked to. You know, it's, I feel like consistency. Check in every so often. Just be like, hey, man, just want to say that I'm thinking about you, and you know, I'm still here for you. Yeah. And
do you know that?
I do. I think it's been a few months, but you know, I'm not trying to blow up his messenger all the time and just be, you know, I don't want to come across as that person. I just want it to be like, I don't know, like any other dad. Like, my dad didn't call me every day. He didn't beat me up or whatever. He'd check in with me every once in a while. You know, he tried to make me feel guilty. Hey, haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah.
All broken.
Yeah.
You know, that type of deal. But I always appreciated it.
I think dads, you know, are connected with letting their children explore life and learn on their own.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I'm not a woman. I'm not a mom. I have a mom. And, you know, my mom protected us, and she was there, and she did everything she could to protect our feelings, our physical bodies, our emotions. And my father was definitely more in tune with, you know, you figure it out. You know, mom would say, that rock's too heavy, don't lift it. Dad'd say, try. You know, and you know, not all moms would say that, for the record. You know, they would just say, be careful.
Yeah.
Be careful with that rock. And dad would be like, you know, pick it up. Now you can't pick it up. Now go pick up that smaller rock until you can pick up this bigger rock. Right.
Or son of a bitch, you picked it up.
Or yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. In my case, my daughter picked up a 40-pound sand weight the other day, and I was 75 pounds. She picked up 75 pounds. Wow. Trainer Tony and I, she deadlifted it, man. It was impressive. She's 6 years old. But I think for
that
me,
thing
today,
weighs more
Thomas,
than she does.
It does. It weighs more than her. She's a little beast. And, you know, you got all this experience with raising children and, you know, the emotions that come with such a heartbreaking story of not knowing about a child like that. That is an emotional toll for any of us. And you're sharing these stories with the world. Today really showed me that, one, there's no right answer. There's no perfect answer in being a parent, right? You kind of said that a moment ago when you said you just want to try harder, but we don't always know what try harder looks like. But you nailed it. It was consistency. Just be consistent with your children. Just be constant. Because you also said today, and I'm kind of wrapping this up here for you, you also said, don't we all need someone in our life who's just there, who we know cares and loves for us and has been consistent with that love throughout our entire lives? You know, for me, I have an older cousin who'd call me on my birthday, April 15th, and text me these days. His name's Buddy. And he was born April 19th. And he, you know, growing up, man, as soon as I got a cell phone, as an adult, never missed a birthday, always texted me. You know, I didn't text him. I didn't have that same connection, but he's quite a bit older than me. And, you know, every birthday to this day still does it. And I think I'll be really sad if he stops. And if he goes his whole life doing it, I'll be even more devastated that next year when he's not there to do it. And so those little tidbits, you know, it's been 2 months, but how often could you do it, right? Yeah. Because how many times have we all been in a moment in life when exactly what we needed to hear was said to us, exactly the love we needed to see or feel came at the right time? Even if you reached out every week, it may be annoying, but the 1 week he needed it may be exactly what he needed in that moment. And therefore, you really summed up, you know, all of this was a reminder to just be there for our children. We don't know the impact it will have on them, and really protect them from the things in life that hurts them. You know, your daughter being, you know, essentially bullied, you know, through what she wanted to express and it not being cool and kind of taken away from her brings me back to my story I told you earlier, which I didn't say, which is to this day, Dan and I are really close and we're always teasing each other about not letting that woman be right. I don't want to be fat. I don't want that woman to be right. And Dan, you know, he's like, I got to be fit. Cause you know, if he gets a little unfit, I give him a hard time. And as I gain a little weight, he'd give me a hard time. And, you know, what we heard as teenagers stuck with us 20 years, and we still talk about it from a stranger. Imagine the power that our parents had and the advice that they give. And I'm just inspired by you building this podcast. You know, it sounds like a lot of it, from what I can see, was for him. For him, you're with your kids every day.
Well, my kids don't listen to me every day. I've got a lot to compete with.
Yeah, but one day everybody will. So really solid advice. I got some great takeaways, and I think more people should listen. You know, you got your style, and there's a million podcasts out there to choose from, but you got a style of just being real, and I wanted to tell you that. You know, you just got a style of telling the story in full detail. And normally you do this by yourself. If this is the first episode, normally Thomas is just talking to himself.
Yeah, sometimes I'll have my my kids on, which I'm planning on doing more of. And at one point in the past, I did a bunch of interviews, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's like life. It's like our kids. You know, we're exploring all of this, you know, life, and sometimes some things work, sometimes they don't. But it's like you just have to keep trying. You know, keep getting out there and seeing what's different. You know, it's instead of saying like, you know, this is how we've always done it. Like, how about let's see what's out there, you know, go explore. So I think that's kind of what I do in this podcast. I'm exploring, I'm seeing what's out there and inadvertently finding more about me in the process, what's inside of me.
That you inspired me there with this thought of podcasts, TV, text, motivational quotes. We always seem to come across exactly what we needed to hear that day. And I hope any listener out there heard something today that is exactly what they needed to hear. And it doesn't matter that they may not know you. I didn't know the lady that has inspired me to not allow myself to get overweight. Like, you know, I was cool with the dad bod, but if, you know, there were times where I had to say, okay, let's get it in check, Ty, like, you know, stop eating that ice cream every day. And, which is it's a real struggle. Ben and Jerry's, the enemy.
Which Ben and Jerry's?
Oh, bro. You want to talk about Ben and Jerry's? Okay. First of all, this is funny. How do you eat Ben and Jerry's, right? You got to eat it right. First of all, you got to pull it out of the freezer. You got to give it 5 to 8 minutes for it just to sit. First you take the lid off and you scrape the lid and you eat that. Then you let it sit for 5 to 8 minutes because you got to let it soften a little bit. It's distinctly different. Distinctly different. The way it hits your mouth, how cold it is because it's too ice cold. And then you got to eat the outer rim because that's what your hand, which is freezing up, because you got to hold it. You don't scoop it in something else. You got to hold that. Your hand's warming it up. You eat all around the edge, and then that best part, I love this part, the flip. Then you flip it, and you get all the bottom melted ice cream, right? You roll that ball over, you eat that, and then generally there's a hard center that has not quite softened up, and then you got to use the spoon. You got to break it up, you know, and then you get some massive bites at the end of just ice cold flavor, and that's the process of which I eat my Ben and Jerry's. And I have found that most people I meet who love ice cream as much as me, we all have the same process. So I got to ask, is that how you eat a pint of ice cream?
So I don't recall how I used to do it, but my dad, believe it or not, fatherly advice, he was like, you just put the sucker in the microwave for 5 or 10 seconds and it's just perfect.
Okay. That's cheating.
I know it's just cheating, but it works. And my go-to Ben & Jerry's is Americone Dream, the Stephen Colbert flavor.
Isn't it American Dream?
Americone. It's got the waffle cone in it.
Oh, yes. I like that one. Half-baked. Okay. Absolutely love it. And spirit for me, little chunky monkey in my life. I'm down with little chunky
cherry
monkey.
Garcia.
I've had the cherry Garcia, not in my top favorite, but I definitely enjoy it. And there's a lot of flavors. I moved to Georgia, and in Georgia, Ben and Jerry's is like $3.50, and in Oregon, it was like $8.99. Wow! And I remember, dude, it was on sale, and I was at Publix or wherever here, dude. I bought 30. Like right away I got here and I was like, what? Are you serious? And there was all these flavors I had not even had yet. So I loaded my cart up with that Ben and Jerry's, dude. And I ate, you know, one a day. But you know, the beauty, I had to change my style because the flavors, I had so many flavors. I don't remember all the names. They were different. And some, there's one with this like really thick chocolate fudge on top, you know, so you have to learn to eat straight down. That way you can mix the chocolate fudge into each of it. And it has nuts in it too. And so I started thinking I was all smooth eating 3 of them a night, you know, but I wouldn't eat all 3. I'd be like, let me just get a little of this one flavor. And then I was like, oh, what's this flavor like? And switch that. So I've actually learned to eat not the whole pint now, which is different, but only if I have three of them to choose from so I can split up the flavor. Because y'all know that that taste right in the beginning when it hits your taste bud is so much better than, you know, 5 minutes in. Now you're just kind of doing it without thinking. But when you switch flavors like every 5 minutes, and that's where it's at.
See, that's why people come to my podcast. They come for the fatherly advice and they stay for the masterclass on how to eat Ben & Jerry's ice cream.
Masterclass. And, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed letting you, you know, you kind of let me ask a lot of questions. I appreciate it. I'd love to come back and share the story of why I have these sunglasses in the first place. They're my son's, and, you know, why I got all these drop lights that can change colors. And, you know, we've been on here a little while, and so I think if it's all right, I'll come back.
Yeah, I'd love to have you back on. I mean, there's so much that I don't really know about all things Tyler, and I would love to know more about how Tyler became Tyler, because, you know, in a lot of ways, I feel like you're like Conan, you know, like my son. Not that I'm your dad or anything like that, but, you know, like you've got that spirit, that indomitable spirit, and like it's taking you places in your professional life and your personal life. And I know that you've had challenges that you've had to surpass and overcome and probably still dealing with. So I would love to talk through that at another episode. But
yeah,
I really appreciate you being on the show, Tyler.
Yeah, I didn't say, but I have two kids, Ryler, who just turned 8, and Savannah, who turned 6. Full name's Ryler James, which I love his name, and Savannah Rhea, which is a cool name as well, we think. And I have learned a lot, and I will absolutely come back and just share my approach as a father.
That's awesome.
I certainly appreciated hearing yours today.
Well, thank you. You've been one of my, actually, you have been my most entertaining guest to date, no doubt. And I will try to take some notes down about Ben and Jerry's, and I will do the Tyler Young. Here's how to do it.
And it's pretty much everyone addicted to ice cream, by the way. Like, I've talked to a lot of them, and, you know, like when I say, do you eat Ben and Jerry's? You know, I could see in their eyes like, oh, you know how to eat Ben and Jerry's. So I really want Ben and Jerry's right now.
I know, you too.
Dang it. And I'm supposed to like do this movie thing. I'm trying to like get just eat right. And now, you know, I'm going to go buy some Ben and Jerry's tonight. Don't lie.
Well, not a sponsor, but Ben and Jerry's were coming for you. Tyler Young, I appreciate your time today. Thanks for being on the show. We'll see you next time.
Searching for holy flames, a sign to light up the way.